We're here in the 12th parak in Ali Shur, and we're on page Nun Beis, after the three stars, where today Rav Volpe is going to bring to our attention the issue of why we do mitzvos and the motivation for mitzvos and how we connect to mitzvos. So he begins here on line 10. Today he says, Magdirim Adam Hamakai Mitzvos Kidati. A person who observes mitzvos is defined as somebody who's religious. He says, let's think about what does it mean, dati. So he argues that if dati is about a religious motivation, about an inner connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well then, maybe that's not so unusual. Maybe that's not so special. Meaning, as he's about to explain, good morning. He says, Be'etzim, hari ze koach mikochos hanefesh. The truth is that a connection to godliness, it's part and parcel, it's built into the human condition. We're on line 12. Zika le'elyon ha'elyonin ha'mekanenes, like beating. Believe Adam, kol Adam bari. Within every person, there is deep down a spiritual connection. We're on side 2, line 12. And Rav Volpe points out, he says, wait a second. It's not such a chiddush to have a religious consciousness, because within every human being, there is this soul makeup. And most people, if you ask them, they will really recognize that they have a soul. For example, right, one of the dumb things that people tell kids, the stupidest things that they tell kids is what? Sticks and stones may break my bones, right, but names will never hurt me. That really is one of the dumbest things you ever heard, because it's quite the opposite. You know, in our own experience, we've had trips to the ER. Thank God the Rebbe Shalom to give them these ways. They mend them, they send them home. But words, names, that's pogay in a person's neshama. That hurts deep down. So a person recognizes that there is something, their emotional makeup, their psychological, you know, their being, that's their neshama. Obviously, there is a spiritual quality there. So everybody has that, and everybody can feel it deep down. Yochol, a person is able, line 13, ha'adam letapeach zikazu, a person can cultivate this. And then us who shol es atzmo keitzad yiskariv el ha'elyon. Then a person asks themselves, how do they cultivate this further? How do they connect to something that is greater from the Ribono Shalom? Because if I feel that there is a connection to godliness, so I'm going to nurture that. That's one question. Or he offers you the alternative, but before that, parenthetically, says v'keitza yitein bitui lahakaras tuvo klapav. How do I give expression to hakaras atov? Which, by the way, in the Chovas Halavavos, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar says that gratitude, which is one of the core psychological character traits in a human being, one of the most important from a psychological standpoint, gratitude underlies the service of Hashem, our gratitude to Hashem for everything that we have. So he says, that's another aspect. And that brings to Avodas Hashem. However, says Rav Volpe, the other option, line 15, V'yachol adam lahazniach zikazu, a person can abandon, can neglect this spark of godliness, ulahes alim imena, and to ignore it. Us, then, he misgalgeles, it rolls, v'holechas me'inyan le'inyan, to line 16, from topic to topic, issue to issue, umislabeshes, and it is cloaked, b'she'ifos mu'urpolos le'sachiriv ateva, and others. He says, then this connection to godliness somehow becomes cloaked in various motivations like being one with nature and all kinds of other approaches. Now, this approach of Rav Volpe, right, you can interpret it as saying that it's a corruption of spirituality. But as we mentioned once before, he may not be saying that, but he also, you know, you could give a different perspective. He also may be complimented, or maybe he would disagree, with a perspective that Rav Kook has in many different places about this idea of seeing these different trends, even though they may be corrupt and misguided, as having an element of avodas Hashem, of godliness within them. And these, over time, as they become manifest in the world, various isms, right? We've talked about communism and Marxism and feminism and, you know, capitalism, all these different things are giving expression to godliness. So actually, when you have someone who's searching for, I don't know, you know, they're to be one with nature or to save the whales, that's coming from their shorish of their elokus within them. So there are different ways of looking at this. But either way, what Rav Volbi is trying to get at is that there is this inner motivation that a person has. And you see it. You see people, they sign up to be, I don't know, public defenders. They could be attorneys who make a great living, you know, very well successful in terms of financial terms, and they volunteer to, you know, what drives them to do that? It's the hergesh of tzedek, the elokus shebahem, that drives them to do that. So that, says Rav Volbi, is ubiquitous. Everybody has that. So what makes a person observant? What makes a person dati, if we all have that? So let's go to the end of the paragraph. Line 21, next paragraph. Me'ata navin, we will now see, kitosi, it's a mistake, likro la'adam hashomer mitzvos dati. It's a mistake to say that somebody who observes mitzvahs, that person is dati. They have a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not true. Kol Adam, he know dati b'koach. Every person has a spiritual makeup. They have the potential for godliness in their world. Yeshnam rak b'nei Adam hanosnin l'koach ze l'hisnavein. There are, it's just different people give it expression in different ways. Rav Kook has an idea in the beginning of his Hakdama to his Siddur called Olas Riyah, where he says that the neshama is always davening. Your soul is always moving forward in its connection, in its growing back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why, in a certain sense, we say that there's a ner neshama, right? When somebody passes away, they light a yahrzeit candle. So the ner Hashem nishmas Adam, because the ner, the energy of the fire, is always moving up. So that symbolizes the neshama that's always being drawn back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the idea that within us there is a ner Hashem nishmas Adam, that's always there. And it's always reaching back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the question is, well, we daven, what happens? We give that ner Hashem nishmas Adam. We give it expression. We give it form in this world. So now Rav Volbi is saying, we've all got that spirituality. The question is, how do we give it expression? And now he goes on and he says, ach, however, don't worry, he says, ach, the Torah Seinu, in our Torah, he says there's something else. And this is a key question. How do you view this? Line 22. Ach, the Torah Seinu, ein liros chas v'shalom, Pulchan hanosin rak bitui leregesh dati. Interesting, says Rav Volbi. Torah and Judaism and Yahadus is not simply an avenue to give expression to inner spirituality. I could see how some might disagree with that line, but Rav Volbi's view is that that's not Torah. It's not just a vehicle, if we feel spiritual, to find a way to channel it. Mimino, he quotes the pasuk, Eish das lomo, kibalnu osa mimarom Torah min hashamayim, v'zeh mechayiv osanu l'kayim kol mitzvoseh. We have to understand that there is a binding nature to being part of a Torah community, to being a Jewish person, to being a human being from the Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. It's not, you know, if I'm feeling spiritual today, if I'm in the mood, that's going to be my calling, so then that's what I'm going to pursue. And if I'm not, I'm not. Right? There are plenty of times we don't feel like pursuing some kind of noble cause, and we just, I don't know, we find cookies in the freezer, and then we sit on the couch. Right? That's not, that just, it's how we feel that particular time. Rav Volbi says that's not the way that it works in Yahadus. It's not an opt-in. It's not saying, well, if you feel like doing it, you do it. If you don't feel like, you don't do it. He says that's not how it works. We receive this at Sinai, and therefore, it's a pact. Sibos hachi of line 25, Eino hakoach hadati asher b'kirbenu. The reason why we are obligated to fulfill mitzvos it's not because we have a natural inclination to get closer to godliness. Ella ha'hiskalus b'har Sinai. Rather, it was the revelation at Har Sinai. And he says, Dalim kli nafshenu, we're too poor, we don't have the capability, lahachel davar zeh, to really grasp this kibori kol olamim hofia alameinu v'niyah kulanu neviim. It's really quite amazing that we receive the Torah at Sinai. It's hard to believe that. You know, Rav Moshe Weinberger at YU, he once made a great observation. He's created a revolution in the world of Chassidus in YU. So he made once an awesome observation. It's so true. He says, you know what our problem with davening is? He says, our problem with davening is not that we don't believe in God. Everybody believes in God. You know what our problem with davening is? That we don't believe in ourselves. Do we really believe that the force that created the entire universe, the entire cosmos, is actually paying attention to what I am saying and really matters what I'm saying? Like, that's really at the root of why, I shouldn't speak for anybody else, but that's probably the root why sometimes our davening stinks. Because we really, like, really, 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 really? Like, it can't be. How could it possibly be? There are 7 billion people in the world, and the world is one speck in this enormous galaxy, and there's one Kol Yochel who created everything, and it's as if like he's paying attention. What, I don't even understand what that means. Obviously, I'm just a speck of nothingness. So that's why I'm not going to take it so seriously. I don't believe in myself. So when you think about Har Sinai, like, could it really be that the creator of the whole universe came down to a bunch of really recently emancipated slaves at a mountaintop and came down to them and said, ah, we're going to make a pact. You're going to be my agents in the world. Like, really? Can we really grasp that? He says, it's amazing. Vishamu midabar b'aleim ponim el ponim. And he says, it's unbelievable. Ein kan, line 27, od gishushei ha-koach ha-dati ba-adam ha-machapes bitui le-zikaso elav yizbarach u-megamgeim todos lofanov. Kim Elokim, hirkin shamayim elyonim klapimata. The Rabbono Shalom, this is not just, you know, us expressing our spirituality. The Rabbono Shalom Kilu kneeled down and leaned over and bent the heavens down to connect to us. It's incredible. And we're still standing there underneath the mountain. So go to the next paragraph, line 33. Chiyuv zeh shel Torah, the obligation of the Torah, umitzvos misinai, from Sinai, makif eskol am Yisrael b'chol makom u'v'chol dor, ish lo ne'edar. This obligation of Torah and mitzvos from Sinai, that surrounds and it accompanies the Jewish people in every place, in every generation. No person is absent from this. Rak lamesim chafshi, zulas hamesim, only the people who have passed on to the next world. Ein af echad chafshi mikiyam mitzvos. Whether we like it or not, we are duty-bound to observe the mitzvos from our contract or an agreement or the bris, you know, bris Sinai. That's what is machayavas, and it's a little more complicated because the Chet Egel and bris of Arvos Moav. But based on this, we can understand why Rav Volbi goes on to the next point to say that the Ramban emphasizes the role of Zechiras Har Sinai, Maimed Har Sinai, as a mitzvah. You know, if you ever look at the end of the Shachar section in the Siddur, there are sheish zechiros, six things to remember every day. So one of those sheish zechiros is Zechiras Maimed Har Sinai. And Rav Volbi is pointing out that Zechiras Maimed Har Sinai is essential, because if you don't believe in Maimed Har Sinai, then the Torah is not binding. Then there wasn't really a contract. That's one point of it. But the other point is to really understand, and this is partly a different discussion, but it's partly the same discussion, to understand how we connect to Sinai. You know, I have this website that I like. It's called simpletoremember.com. I've shared it in different places with some of you. I can't vouch for exactly the historical veracity of every step in that chain, but, oh, I have actually a copy because I was using it recently. But they have this website where you can track. It's only about, it's one page worth of names. I should have it in here. I'll show it to you. Yeah, here it is. This is a page that begins with Moshe Rabbeinu. This is just a series of names. It's very nice, and you could fill it in with your own personal experience. It starts with Moshe Rabbeinu. They go through, the Rambam gives you the list from Moshe to the end of the Talmud. Right? We saw it on a Sunday morning once. Then they give you a bunch of Gaonim in the middle that I'm not so familiar with. And then once you get to Rashi, it's pretty much easy. So at the bottom, let's say I would follow, the way I put it here, my Rabbeim, the late Gaon, the Tzaddik, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, and then Lahav, the Ben Chaim, Rav Chaim, Rav Shechter, and Rav Schwartz. They are students of Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, who was a student of his father, who was from, you know, Rav Chaim, from the original Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, all the way back and go straight to Moshe at Sinai. And this is a very important thing to do, especially for younger people, because we tell kids, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah at Sinai, so nobody can figure out what that looks like in their mind. How could you imagine what that even looks like? And it feels so distant, and it is very distant. But if you can actually have one, it's only one page. Just one page.
One per generation, or those are clusters of generations?
No, these are one per person. These are one person to the next.
How
pass it around?
It's a different person.
Generation?
It could be longer than a generation because some people live longer, but they are. It's an unbroken tradition. The Rambam tells you in the Hakdama, which is what we studied a lot the last couple of years in our Sunday morning group. That's one of the things that I get very excited. I feel very passionate about this. That's why I keep saying the same thing over and over. The idea that the Rambam tells us these are 40 people, and it's not imaginary, and it goes from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rav Ashi. It's only 40 people. That covers from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the year 500. 500 is not so long ago. I mean, it's 1,500 years ago, but once you get to 500, so then you're only 500 years from Rashi. So 500 years from Rashi, now you're basically in our backyard. Right? Because they get from Rashi the world of Ashkenaz, and everybody can fill in their own chart at the bottom exactly where it goes back. But that's the same point that Rivoli is saying. If we don't understand that we have a direct connection to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai, so then, you know, it's not really binding. And then if you feel like it, you feel like it. If you don't feel like it, you don't feel like it. But if you don't see yourself as part of a Masorah, so then how is that going to have any connection to me? You know, yeah, maybe there were some people a long time ago who stood at Har Sinai. No, but it's a part of my identity as part of this Shal Shalas HaMasorah.
It's so far from where our culture is today, which is all about really doing what you feel and doing what's emotionally resonant with you. And anything that's wrong, it's just like the antithesis of what we're being fed in our culture.
Yeah, so there are two points. One is what Mrs. Began is pointing out is the idea of autonomy today. You go into a hospital, and the doctor doesn't say, this is what I'm going to do, right? Would you like this? Would you like this? It's like, is this a smorgasbord? Is this a wedding?
I don't know anything
like,
about medicine.
I don't know. I have a dental degree that I claim for myself, D, from half of Nechama's degree. I got a D when I survived medical dental school, so I got a little piece of that. When we graduated dental school, I got a little piece of that, but more than that, you know, I don't know more than like watching waxing teeth in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? One time a patient once called, and I answered her phone, and Nechama wasn't around, and the patient said, oh, they weren't feeling well. I said, you know what, the truth is, you should probably take 2 Tylenol and call back in an hour. That was the most medical advice I ever dispensed. I don't know if that was against the law that I did that. But I don't know what I'm doing when they ask me, do you agree to do this? If you think it's a good idea, so do it. Meaning I could get a second opinion, but the idea that autonomy governs everything, even medicine, so autonomy is piece number one. Number two is the question of how do we view history? I'm trying to remember what book. Someone just shared with me a piece from a book that was discussing this question about the role of history in people's consciousness. A lot of times, it's very avant-garde to be in the present and in the future, not so much in the past. Right? How much weight does the past carry? So here you have a whole religion which is predicated on living in the past. But the answer is, it's not about living in the past. It's bringing the past into the present and the future. It's living transcending time. It's living beyond the moment that you're in. But these are two very difficult trends in society. On the other hand, the more that society moves to the extreme, the more that you find more people who are pushing back against it because they feel like they're losing control. many people have chided me for the fact that I have chosen to buy an old phone on eBay, not to have a smartphone. So I shared this with somebody recently who told me that they know someone who recently went into the cell phone store, and the guy at the counter said that he has an influx of people who are asking him for flip phones because they put down their smartphone and they say, I would like my life back. So there is a pushback that's happening in certain places. So bringing it back here, what Rav Volbi is saying is we need to remember Maamar Har Sinai because that's the Mechayev. That's why we're obligated. And the question is, well, how does that play itself out? Because I think it's an important conversation to be had. How do you view Maamar Har Sinai? How do you understand what does Rav Volbi mean about this line? Because some people look at Maamar Har Sinai, especially because in school, in grade school, we are introduced to the important Maamar Chazal, where the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Kafa Aleim Har Kegigis, the Ribbono Shel'olam held the mountain over them like a barrel. And what did he tell them? If you take the Torah, great, and if you don't, Sham Tehei Kvuraschem, you'll be buried right under the mountain. Now, how nice does that sound? Right? And you could tell me from today till tomorrow that it's good for us and it helps us fight the Yetzer Hara and it's a great thing and it's all very nice. But like, seriously, so how does that feel? And compound the, you know, autonomy piece with telling us, you know, this whole religion is predicated on an agreement that you made when your back was against the wall and someone had a gun to your head, right? That's why the Gemara says, Mikan Moda Rabbalo Raisa. The Gemara calls it out. The Gemara says, if that were an actual transaction, if you were doing a business transaction that way, you could go to the Bezdin the next day and say, I want to file a claim. I want to make a complaint against that. That's not binding. That's ridiculous. So if the only way we view Har Sinai is that way, then I think we're going to have a problem. But I also don't think that's the way that the Ribbono Shel Olam only meant it to be understood. Because if you look in the Torah Shlema, which is Rav Kasha's amazing compendium on the Chumash, he quotes a million midrashim and then he has incredibly extensive footnotes, Rav Mendel Kasher. So he quotes a medrash there on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. The pasuk says, Yonasi Bechagve Hasela. It's the dove in the cleft of the rock. Why does the dove live under the shelf in the rock? Because that's where it has protection. No predatory birds are going to be able to see it and eat it for breakfast. So says this medrash on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Yonasi B'chag V'Hasela, that is why the Ribbono Shel Olam held the mountain over our heads. Not to be a threat, but to be a source of protection. And then he goes weiter, and you'll find this idea in Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan's essay on weddings. So the Medrash says he held it over our heads like a chuppah. What an image. Beautiful. So he suggests, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, suggests that's why you make a chuppah at a wedding, because it reminds you of the chuppah that the Ribbono Shel Olam made B'yom Chasunasa, when we stood at Har Sinai Ke'ilu under the chuppah with him and we committed to a life, a destiny together. So that's, you know, that's the vision that we have. So that's a very different perspective than, you know, the Chicago gangster style coercion, right? Think about that. Yesterday I was at a wedding and it was beautiful. You had this young man and this young woman and they clearly love each other so much and everybody was happy. And Rav Soloveitchik writes in an essay in memory of his uncle, Rav Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav. So he writes about how when people get married, they have a shared destiny. It's not just some kind of utilitarian pact. It's a shared destiny of the life that they're going to share together. This is their commitment to being one. So you see that at a wedding. It's beautiful. It's amazing. So that, says the Medrash, is the image that you get from Maamar Har Sinai. So how do you reconcile that image with the image of Kaf Aleim Har Kegigis? Yeah?
The way I always reconcile it is that sometimes it's going to be romantic and sometimes you're not going to be desiring to fulfill it, or you're going to think that the times are no longer relevant. You're not going to be in the mood. So at that time, there has to be a compulsory component.
Right, I would agree with that.
So it's
so what Mrs. Beagan is pointing out is that they're not. It's not contradictory. It's actually quite the contrary. It's complementary.
Right.
You need both. It almost goes back to that vort that we had from Rav Volbe way back at the beginning about Yemei Ava and Yemei Sina, that some days we're going to feel inspired and some days we're not going to feel inspired, but we're going to continue even to some measure, the Rabbeinu Tam said anyway. There has to be an element of commitment. Otherwise, like you pointed out, you know, one day you're not in the mood, so then everything falls apart. As opposed to saying that it's all about just the commitment and there's no love and there's no future, then, you know, then it's a lifeless, spiritually desiccated experience.
Also, synthesizes
the 100%, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
And that different times in our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we go back to Maamar Har Sinai, now we can understand how we're going to feel on a daily basis. Sometimes we're going to feel like we're going to do this because we are really, you know, inspired. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever inspired to take out the garbage, but Nechama does not like to take out the garbage. She doesn't, and I don't blame her, especially in weather like this. So I'm going to take out the garbage, whether I like it or not. Sometimes I feel like, oh, you know, I'm so inspired to do her a tova, I'm going to take out the garbage, and sometimes I'm just like, I'm just going to take out the garbage right now, right? Different times you do things for different motivations, and I think having this in mind, this hechrech for kiyam hamitzvos of Rav Volbe is important on both sides. So yes, on the one hand, it's true that Rav Volbe is telling us we don't do mitzvos just because it's a nice expression of spirituality, and if we don't feel spiritual. On the other hand, to just to say that we do it because there was Maamar Har Sinai and you had to do it, so you're going to do it. You know, that doesn't work for a long time. That only works, like the P.S. Etzner writes in his introduction to the Chovas HaTalmidim, it only writes when your kids are very little. It only works when your kids are very little. If you tell them, you do this because I said so and you have to do it, it'll work when they're very little. But that's not the ideal, because you know what happens. Chanoch lanar al pi darko, gam ki yaskin lo yosu mimeno. Because when the child gets older, then all of a sudden he says, you know what, now I don't have to do it anymore. You can't make me do it anymore. So if Maamar Har Sinai is just all about saying, you have to do it, and I'm going to make you do it because you're forced, so then it's not going to stick. And so I think putting these two together in the context of the Mesorah is what we need, you know, to strive to meet that balance. So on the second column, we'll finish up. He says, where does this come from? He says, we don't need abstract proofs. This is something that speaks to me personally, although there are others who like, you know, the Aish discovery seminars and other things like that. There are some people who that speaks to. It's not really my cup of tea. Rather, he says, line 50, this speaks to me. Mehemner aleinu gedolei umasenu me'ador ha'achronu l'mayla b'kodesh. We have trust in the great people before us. And the people before them, Derech HaRishonim, HaGaonim, HaAmoraim, HaTanoim, VaHanavim, all the way the steps through that chain that we passed around. Ador Mekablei HaTorah, Ki Af Echad Mehem Loheid Sheker Lebonav Chas V'Shalom. No one lied to their children. This is the Kuzari's idea of mass revelation at Sinai. No one lies to their children. V'hinenu Roim Be'einenu Mamish, Kol Mashehim Esaprim Lanu Al Torah Min HaShemayim. All the generations tell us, Moshe got the Torah at Sinai. Hein Torah Shebichsav, V'hein Torah Shebalpeh. This is something that we're going to instill. That's why, of course, the Pesach Seder is all about experiential education, because we have to re-experience this idea of Yitzias Mitzrayim and the beginning of Klal Yisrael. We need to always emphasize our connection to the Mesorah, because that's what's going to bring us back to Sinai. Because the Sinai experience is what binds us. That's what defines Torah, and that's what defines our bris. But the Sinai experience should not be misconstrued as just one of fear and threat. It should be understood as the balance between love and firm commitment. And that's something that Rav Volbe is teaching us about our relationship to commitment to mitzvahs.